Good morning, Brother John.
Good morning, Brother Jerry.
Hey. Big day today. Big day.
Yeah, big day. Ooh, heating up a little bit here. It's already 80 and it should get up to the 90s. And you got some fog, huh?
Fog. Yeah, we've been having a little bit lately as the seasons do the thing here, which is hard to describe. We get this stuff. And so, yeah, I'm where I was last week. I drove to a good spot to get some free Wi-Fi. So we're going to hear a little street noise from time to time, but it should be good.
That makes it authentic.
Now, I think longtime listeners will probably be aware that since we did our podcast in the Alehouse in Chicago, we have begun a new season. And so there are five things about this new season that I think are worthy of mentioning.
Let's hear them.
Okay. The number one thing is, of course, the new season started with The Bros Are Alive. And that one is season 2, episode 1. And then, you know, and we've started numbering all of the episodes. I'm almost done with renumbering all of them. And a lot of episodes these days, we're getting up there in numbers, which is cool.
As an accountant, I appreciate all this numbering.
I bet you do. Did you notice how I have accommodated the double digits with zeros in there?
Yes, you got the proper number of digits, which always makes me feel comfortable.
Well, we're good with this numbering system until, season 99, episode 99.
Oh, God.
That's funny, isn't it?
It's also scary, too.
Yeah, cancer humor. That's what this is. Okay, so you people will also notice now, we have a URL, a universal resource locator, a way of getting us on the web. And traditionally, that has been thebro.show. But as of today, you can also use bro.show. Cool, huh?
Mm.
Domain became available about a month ago, so I've been keeping my eye on it. Today, we did the switch over. So you can use either one. They're both good. And likewise, you can get a shirt by typing shirt.bro.show, and we think this will make things easier for people to communicate with each other. But John, there's something else.
Well, I want to let you know I really appreciate the fact you made things easy, because I'm one of the candidates who can use it.
Well, you know, I buddy, I'm right there right behind you, even though I deal with all this tech stuff all the time. The changes in domain names has been pretty radical the last 2 years. So yeah, we can do a .show domain instead of .com or .org or .net or any of the old stuff. So this is pretty cool, but I'm leading up to something else here. We got something else going
shirts.
On. Yeah, shirts. Now, you said something to me, and you've been commenting on this the last 2 episodes, so I think it's important to bring this up, that a lot of your friends up in Chicago who I've met and a lot of people who you have not met now know that, hey, you've got a brother from Austin, Texas, and he's a gregarious kind of fellow. And, hey, how's he doing? And you're getting kind of tired of answering that
question.
Well,
you know, there are two categories, my friends, and then the ones I don't know, I call them your fans.
Ooh. Pressure, a lot of pressure. Anyway, I thought, well, you know, John's got a problem here. And so I thought, well, what would be the funniest, most ridiculous way to solve this problem? And, of course, this is my specialty, as you know. So I thought, well, what the heck? Let's make John a T-shirt that says on it, "My brother is doing fine." So, you know, it's got the fist bumps on it and everything like that. So that was my first impulse, is let's just create a T-shirt for John. And, you know, by the way, people down here do also ask about you. Okay?
Me?
You.
Oh,
how's your brother doing? No, they do. They're not necessarily listeners of the podcast. Take a breath. These are,
well,
I know, this notoriety,
well, first
is probably
thing,
weighing
the whole
heavily
idea
on you.
Of you solving problems is all because you create problems you can solve.
Yeah, I have to admit that. That's another one.
God bless.
You've been putting up with this for how many years now?
Too many to count. That's all I got to say.
68.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, other than mom, you're the person I remember
now,
and know the longest.
Who's your target market for this shirt? Do I have a bullseye on my chest or what?
Well, initially you were. In fact, I got real carried away in my mind, and I thought, well, why don't I make them a shirt that says my brother's doing okay on the days that I'm not doing fine, I'm just doing okay. And then I had another one. My brother is in deep shit. That was a pretty good one. I like that. But luckily, I didn't print any of these. Just the one. I thought, well, okay, you know, if I have one and you have one, of course, we'd have to buy a couple of them. And then we get our brother Jeff to buy one. Then we've got our minimum five. And we'll get this thing printed. And you know, we'll just do the shortest campaign length we can possibly do and all that good stuff. But then something happened, John. You're not going to like this. You're not going to like this.
All right.
So what occurred to me is that, hey, this is kind of like a universal message. You know, it's kind of like, this is like a bunch of stuff. This is like, you know, this is a way to promote friendship and brotherhood in any room you walk into. I know. Look.
So there's a generic brother out there, huh?
Kind of like, you know, he ain't heavy, he's my brother. I mean, you know. Yeah.
Right. I mean, the brother, the bro.
And, you know, and people will say, oh, I don't know, that's a little misogynistic, don't you think? Well, okay, you know, sue me or whatever, but you got to start somewhere, right?
You've started being politically incorrect a long time ago.
Okay.
Don't worry about it.
Are we going to let that one go? Boy, this is not going to go over well at work, probably, for you. You might be in trouble with this.
Oh, no, it'll
They'll take it literally.
Yeah.
They'll take
well,
it literally,
you know,
right?
Yeah, I think that's where they'll start, but that's okay. I think the fact that the thing is that the shirt will elicit questions, which it never hurts, gives an opportunity to explain what we're doing. So I think that's very good. I want to mention that the idea of, I started this whole thing by saying, yeah, I feel like wearing a doggone placard that says my brother's doing fine, because I was getting so many, you know, questions up here as to, were you still here? How are you doing? Did you get home okay? So back in 1967, the Cardinals had a pitcher by the name of Bob Gibson, Hall of Famer, who broke his leg. And he got tired of answering questions as to when he'd come back, this and that. So he ended up actually wearing one, a placard that said, I will be back pitching at a certain time. My leg feels fine. He had all the questions answered.
Wow.
So, kind of just to kind of give him a little bit of credit.
I didn't know that.
For the idea. That's where I came up with this idea that I should be wearing a placard, you know, or a billboard or
the modern day t-shirt.
Whatever
the modern day t-shirt is that. So
yes.
Here you go. Now, just so you know, guys, same great t-shirt we always sell, same great fabric.
Ooh.
This one's black and it's simple, it's to the point. It's got our new URL. Right below where it says my brother's doing fine. And this is, I think, we'll see how this goes. But this is part of our season two initiative is we're going to get more creative with these t-shirts. So noted. Okay.
Well, I'll tell you, that's, I just, as usual, I'm in uniform. It's just irresistible. You can't help but feel it on your skin.
Yep.
And then you feel the need to touch it and realize how lucky you are to have such a comfortable shirt on.
Absolutely.
Which in our cases is covering up a lot of equipment.
Oh, yeah, there's that.
Whatever. So that's always good. It does a good job. I mean, I'll tell you right now, the medium I've got, and sometimes I wear a shirt and it looks like I've got a bulge.
Right.
And now
for your
with
bag,
this shirt,
for your bag
it's just very, yeah, my bag, hernia,
yeah,
you name
me
it,
too.
It's stacked up. That's all I got to say. But
this one works
okay
because it's long, right?
It's not, long. I'll tell you, that's one thing I really look for in a t-shirt. I mean, the comfort level here is high, but also it's got to be long enough that it can fit into your blue jeans.
Yep.
And as you're walking around, it doesn't pull out, et cetera.
Yep.
That's a very important feature to have.
Well, also, I think it's important that we've talked about sensitive nipples in the past, so I won't go over that. But. Yeah,
ooh,
but a related topic is that, people are very attracted to the t-shirt. And like last night. I went to the sweat lodge I usually go to. And, yeah, I have to tell you, a lot of folks were going, wow, great T-shirt. What's the fabric like? I said, well, go ahead, check it out. And, you know, so if you're a little lonely and you need a little tactile contact with your fellow humans, you know, it works.
Well, this sounds like a T-shirt to wear if you're going to be going down to Rush Street. You need a good pickup line.
Wow, there's a thought.
Yeah, I think that's for other customers.
That's
not for us.
Our pickup days are done. But
yeah, they're in the distant
past. Yeah, afraid so. So anyway, that's a good deal. And you got a little follow up.
What's the deal now? When officially is this shirt going to go on the
market? As we speak, it is there. It's ready to roll. Yeah.
Ooh.
Just go to shirt.bro.show. And it'll take you right to this very T-shirt. And, you know, it's going to be good times. You can pick this thing up immediately. It's a one-week campaign, so you got 5 days left. I started it, you know, a day and a half ago.
God, you put so much pressure on everybody.
Wow. Well, look at it.
That's okay. That's okay. I mean, people need to make their decisions right now, because if we... What typically happens, they say, oh, nice shirt. I'll have to think about that.
Mm.
And before you know it, the thought just slips out of their mind. And so I do appreciate the sense of urgency that you have created here, which is fine. This is very good.
Yeah, well, I'm definitely going to buy two. So, all right. You got follow-up. You got follow-up for us.
Oh, I can't believe it. You know, it's amazing how we have these shows. We kind of then talk a little bit about what should be happening, what we anticipate, sort of look into our murky ball, you know, to take a look and
crystal
see
ball.
Exactly what's going to happen. The old crystal ball. Yeah, thank you for helping me there. And sure enough, over this last week, the Chicago has announced that it is going to host a global summit on climate change. Now, this fits our episode 23 in our first season, the one called On Like Donkey Kong, which we mostly talked about donkey baseball, but we did also talk about mayors ruling the world. And we know what's happened is that Trump has decided to basically back away from the Paris climate agreement, and Chicago is taking the lead here in hosting a group of mayors. And what they're doing is just the kinds of things we talked about. They're coming up with their own. They're saying, look, we don't care whether President Trump has done the accord, you know, is going to comply with the Paris Agreement or not. We're going to bring together mayors, and we're going to work individually on doing it in our own cities so we can set up models, we can tweak them, we can exchange ideas, we can approve, do this, do that, show how we are going to do it, we being the mayors in the United States. But this also is covering
sister cities.
They've invited... Yeah, sister cities, it's also going to have the mayor of Paris to be there. I also noticed it only listed about 5 or 6 mayors, and I noticed this mayor, Austin Mayor Steve Adler, is also in the article. So it's kind of interesting that Chicago's hosting it, and clearly one of the key mayors that is mentioned in the Chicago Sun-Times News article is the mayor of Austin,
Steve
Adler. So I thought that was really good. Now, it's amazing how these things will pop up. So that's one follow-up. But just yesterday...
Hold on, dude. I got to say something about our...
Oh, you always have to say something.
I'm sorry about that. But hey,
here's the deal.
See, you sent me that article about this summit that they're having in Chicago, and there's a striking photo of your mayor, Rahm Emanuel. And I have to tell you, man, the Romster. Here's the deal, is that I saw that picture and whoa, it had an immediate biological effect on me. So if people want to, I maybe should put a link to this article so people can use this picture effectively. But this guy, Rahm Emanuel, that photo in particular, and this guy scare the shit out of me. So if you want to get things going in the morning, I just suggest you pull up this picture because it works. It's amazing. This guy can scare the shit out of me. So there you go. John, you should be careful, John,
hey,
by
listen,
the way.
He's got the action. Well, he's got the action to back up. He's a kick-ass mayor, which we know that mayors
yes.
should be. Mayors need, they like to have action. That's because at the city level, at the big city level is where the action is. That's something we learned in the podcast, that episode.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, and, you know, these guys are sports cars. They handle, right? They're close to the road. They handle really well.
Oh,
they
yes.
take tight turns. And Rahm Emanuel is the sports car of sports cars. All praise.
That's very good. So it just within the days, I mean, this last yesterday, I take a look and somebody points out to me that our most recent podcast, the one last mm-hmm. week, we talked about the fact that football, the NFL in particular, needs to get their act together and start, like baseball has done, using more statistics, becoming more analytic in terms of their approach to the game. Now, we know that there is already a lot of statistics, but how are they using them? Do they have general statistics? Are they collecting the
information? In fact, I asked you about this stuff, because remember you took me to those baseball games, and I was stunned by how many stats are on the boards. And, you know, like, and weird stuff, like the pitches. I knew people were doing the MPH, the miles per hour on a pitch, but I had no idea that they were doing, like, the angle of trajectory for a hit. Or a home run, or the speed of the ball off the bat. This is cool stuff. And I was nerding out on that. I thought it was great. And I think I mentioned to you, you know, it'd be cool to have some of this stuff in other sports too. And here we go.
So what happened was that they're going to put chips into the football so that we can not only determine the velocity of the ball as the quarterback is throwing it, but also the spins on the ball. Which is important because we know that a spiral, mm-hmm. how do you know it's a good mm-hmm. spiral? It's the number of spins that
the
ball
takes.
We've never known this. So, no, it's something which has been kind of out. It hasn't been, you know, done yet. And so they're going to put these chips in the ball. Don't ask me.
Balance.
I didn't even realize. Yeah, there's a balance issue. There's also a weight issue. Because we know that the weight of the ball and if the inflation, we don't need to get into
Tom Brady.
There's been scandals on these sort of things.
I didn't talk about that.
So we've got this. So we got the fact that in this year, they're going to start collecting the data, which you got to do. And then once you get the data, I'm sure they'll go the other steps to start analyzing it, educating the fans as to what the various new metrics we have. So I really felt quite good that it's almost like I think the NFL is listening to our podcast and
obviously.
Says, you know what, it's out there now, so we better break it. We better break the news about the chip.
We don't want to piss John off.
The ball and
my big brother.
Yeah, you're right. So I've just been eagerly awaiting this, and I don't have to wait any longer. It's
well, the
happening.
Cool thing about it is, if you think about this, number one, balance. So how did they do the balance? The way they did the balance was very interesting because, to me anyway, and to all nerds everywhere, I'm sure. For number one is the weight. You got to get that weight down. So the way they got the weight down was they like radically reduced the weight of this unit. And guess what? They're using components that are in the cell phones that we use every day. They're using an accelerometer, a gyroscope, and also a radio, obviously. They've got to transmit this data back somewhere. They can't use Bluetooth. It's they've got to use Wi-Fi of some sort. So, now you're talking about hacking and all kinds of other stuff, but I don't think they care because it's all public information anyway. So we've got all this stuff going on. Now, how do you balance something like that? Even if it just weighs a gram or less, you know, you still got something that will make that ball behave differently. So the way they do it is they put it on the opposite side of the valve they use for filling up the football. Tom Brady, sorry. And, so what happens is they make that valve weigh more by the amount that the chip weighs.
Very good. And you know, I learned some terminology about football. I didn't realize a football has a bladder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't either. I had no idea.
I don't know, and don't ask me how exactly what that means. And physically what the bladder is in the football, but I guess the best we can way we can describe it would be to say that it's at the opposite side as the you know, the air.
We're gonna have to do some follow up on that
the
next
valve.
Week because I yeah, both
yeah,
of us.
Yeah, I'm sure
yeah,
that's
we have a, bladder stuff.
That's elicited some interest here. Yeah, we've got bladders now. Football, we know football have bladders
yep.
too.
That's cool. Cool so. Stuff.
So I was glad to report those two items, and I look forward. I'm sure we'll have more in the future.
So now. What about the show? Here we're going to get into what we're going to talk about. It's
ooh,
it, this now this
yeah.
for us is a very interesting episode because this deals entirely, directly or indirectly, with St. Louis, the city of our birth. We were both born in the city itself.
Yeah.
Correct, John?
Yeah, that is that. If this hit home, it's going to
yeah.
hit home. Our episode today, and I mean, I think what started it was. And what we'll finish with is the fact that we know about the kind of riot. They weren't, I would call them more disturbances. They weren't violent.
Not to the point of loss of life or injury, no.
Yeah, life, yeah. That's true. A few bricks were thrown and, you know, maybe a couple policemen were hurt, but no fatalities.
Yep.
And it was all pretty peaceful, relatively speaking. We had some arrests. But that's where we're going to end.
Right.
Because... Right now, I think the word, the phrase I use, and it's sort of like if St. Louis is in the national news, it can't be
that's
good.
That's it. I mean, really. And this has been going on for a while. You know, St. Louis is, we brought this up in a previous episode too. St. Louis is ahead of its time in terms of losing stuff like teams and geography and population.
Yeah, and population.
I mean, really, we are from a loser city. I mean, we are the leaders of losing.
And you know what's hard? It's hard not to do this episode with. We're going to try to be as fair and as kind as we can be as we go through. And because St. Louis is like a city punching bag.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like out there and saying, hit me. And, you know, the thing is we could spend the whole show talking about the studies that have been done about St. Louis because, like Jerry's mentioned, it's kind of the bellwether of loser cities. It's been always on the leading edge. It's the one that kind of had the bleeding of its downtown area in the 40s, while most cities had it in the 50s and 60s,
yeah.
et cetera. But we just to kind of not get into a lot of the detail, I mean, I actually read an article where some urban study student decided that the problem that St. Louis has is the arch. The arch caused all these problems.
Oh, man.
I thought, oh, my God.
I know.
God,
I know,
please.
Really.
Where do we stop blaming things? Where do we're coming up with these excuses? Oh, dear. But to frame this, St. Louis, back in 1910, was the fourth largest city in the United States,
yep.
behind New York, Chicago, and Philadelphia.
Wow.
By 1950, it reached its highest population, and that population being 800 and almost 900,000. Since 1950, it has been on the decline. And as we speak, based upon our latest census, St. Louis is ranked 62nd in terms of population as we look at cities. Now, just to kind of clarify that doesn't mean that St. Louis is landlocked. It very early in its history, St. Louis County basically enveloped it all the way around from one side to the river to the other, so that St. Louis County does not allow, and there's been innumerable efforts to try to combine the two with no
None.
Success. So as a result, the population right now of St. Louis is somewhere hovering around 300,000.
Wow.
Now, on the good side, the bleeding in terms of the whole statistical metropolitan area has nowhere near been that bad. You know, being one of the top five areas, metropolitan areas back in the early 1900s, we're now ranked 20th. So we're still considered a, you know, reasonably good, marketable city. In that regard. So that kind of sets up in terms of the, you know, as we take a look at the general features or demographics as they relate to St. Louis. But we wanted to talk a little bit about our three
areas. Yeah. Sports.
Being sports, film, and fake news.
And we got some good stuff on each one of these. Now, people are going to go, wow, is this a bummer episode? You know, is this the one where we need to hide sharp objects? No. Because the Daniels brothers, well, at least two of them, really have some hope on this thing. And the hope lies in the fact that St. Louis has done something great, and it's been unrecognized. And today we're going to recognize it.
Well, the thing is that I really get annoyed at people who are able to describe the problems, whatever mm-hmm. they be, and then don't have a solution.
Awful.
And I would like to think the Bro Show not only concentrates on problems, but what they do is they like to take a look and see if there's some solutions. And we come up with our ideas. And as you can see, quite often those ideas happen.
Yeah.
And so we're ready. We're ready for St. Louis ideas to happen that we come up with.
Yeah, and you know, we're not just a pretty t-shirt. Okay, I just want to say that.
Exactly. I mean, this isn't shallow. There's some depth to it.
Absolutely.
So,
as
we take a look, the first...
Go ahead, John. Sorry.
Sports in St. Louis.
Let's do it.
Listen, the fact is that how many people say St. Louis is a sports town? Well, it's easy to say we don't have anything other than sports. But the thing is that they have been rated in numerous studies, polls, surveys, as the best sports city in the country. Wall Street Journal has called them that. The Sporting News, which
originated in St. Louis.
That used to be in St. Louis, didn't it? What happened to this? Oh, it's not in St. Louis anymore. Oh, that's another story.
A venerable publication, however.
Now, in the day, we thoroughly enjoyed it when it had 90% of it baseball. But St. Louis has got the reputation of being the best sports city because of two sports franchises. Pro four sports franchises, namely the St. Louis Cardinals, the baseball team, and we used to call them the St. Louis Baseball Cardinals, and we'll get into that in a bit. And then we've also got our hockey team, the St. Louis Blues. But somewhere behind that in the history, there is a history of us losing sports teams. And why is St. Louis lost? And we're going to talk a little bit about each of the sports, the biggies, and what has happened with St. Louis. Now, the first one, of course, is baseball. The Cardinals are, you know, not one of the founding members of the National League, but they are one of the early members. They've been in the National League since 1892. They've been in existence as a professional team since 1881-82. But they're not the only exposure that St. Louis has had to major league baseball. And it's one of my sad childhood memories that just is kind of fleeting in the
background. Getting some Kleenex.
It's like the St. Louis Browns.
Yeah.
They were one of the early members of the American League, which started in 1901. From 1902 to 1953, St. Louis had two major league baseball
clubs. Right. And you wouldn't have had to go to Chicago if they'd kept it up. Well, that's not true.
Yeah. In fact, my criteria for where I decided to live and work was one of the criteria was that the city had to have two major league clubs. So I was limited to actually my first choice was San Francisco, Oakland. And my second choice was Chicago, and I got a job in Chicago, and I decided, hey, this is it. This is good sports town.
Yeah.
So, but back to the thing, and what we failed to forget about St. Louis Browns, I mean, it's an early one. It's 1953. But the St. Louis Browns did have some success. In fact, from 1901 to 1925, the major league team that was really considered the one to follow in St. Louis was the Browns.
Wow.
The Browns of the early 1920 through 1924 was a very strong contender and came within one game of winning their American League pennant from the powerhouse New York Yankees.
Yeah, and that's saying something.
That is. The other thing I like to always point out when somebody, you know, starts knocking the St. Louis Browns, the Browns played in Sportsman's Park, which is where also the Cardinals played, from 1920 to 1953. The Cardinals and the Browns shared a park called Sportsman's Park. It was later called Busch Stadium. It was used by the Cardinals through 1966. But who's the tenant? Who's the landlord? The landlord.
The Browns.
Browns.
Yeah, and John, I have to ask.
So they're the ones.
Did you ever attend a game in Sportsman's Park under that name? Oh, that's
no.
A sad point. I'm sorry.
Sad.
I'm sorry.
There's
I
another
a painful memory.
Sore point.
Oh, shit.
My first game, this is what's so tragic, is the fact that the first game I went to was in 1954, and the Browns left in 1953.
So, oh, man.
Oh, I've lived this. I mean,
this is a wait. This
I've
is a wait.
Books I've got.
This is a...
There's actually a St. Louis Browns fan club that I've gone to their banquets, commiserated with other fans of
wow.
The Browns. It's kind of sad as every year when you go to the banquet, there are fewer and fewer of the guys from the team. I mean, 1953 is pretty far time ago. So, baseball is one area in which the St. Louis has been a loser. They have lost the Browns, which by the way became the Baltimore Orioles. If I could just enter one quick story about it, the first game I went to Baltimore. I don't know why. I went to their ballpark. For some reason, I was wearing a St. Louis Browns t-shirt. It was something that I hadn't thought of consciously, but my subconscious must have said, wear that shirt. And I went to the customer service area to pick up all the regular stuff I do. And when I went up to there was a woman who was probably close to my age. And she said to me two words, welcome
home.
Oh,
wow. Where are those Kleenex?
Yes. I couldn't believe it. That's actually, that's sad, but in a way, it's kind of nice. I mean, what we'll do is we're actually leaving the baseball segment of the sports part of the show.
That is a high note. That is a high note.
Welcome
home. That's beautiful.
So moving on to another sport, which unfortunately this one we don't have anymore.
Yeah.
This is football. St. Louis, one thing we're not going to do is there. You could look through the sports history of St. Louis and find that we've had these what I call one-offs. They're like we have one year where we have a sport and it doesn't stick, so they decide to leave. They can't take it. I guess they figure they just don't have the popularity or acceptance or whatever. So if you look at football, you can find a couple of times, one time in the 20s and one time in the 40s, where there was the 30s, where the St. Louis had a NFL football team. But it was just for such a short duration, it's hardly worth mentioning. So the first entry that we really think about as kids, because we're all part of it, was the St. Louis Football Cardinals.
Good name.
And the fact is that that all took place in 1960. And it's all because the Chicago had two football teams, one of them was the Chicago Cardinals. And with the proliferation of network TV, et cetera, it's just that the TV popularity was overwhelming for the Chicago Bears. So the Cardinals looked to going to another city, and the natural place to go was St. Louis, relatively close. They'd actually been doing some charity games with the Glennon Hospital or the Shriners Hospital in St. Louis. And the thing that really has kind of worked against St. Louis in terms of football was NFL, and this has happened in a variety of sports, is the sport venue. And they had to play actually for several years, 5 or 6 years, with the promise. They made the promise of the football team that they would build them a football stadium. And so what happened is they played in the ballpark, Sportsman's Park, which became Busch Stadium, seated only 30,000. They could punch it up a little bit more for football. And then in 1966, they moved into their own venue, a multi-purpose stadium called Bush Memorial Stadium. Yes. So the fact is that the St. Louis Football Cardinals were not very, they never hosted or won any other postseason. They were in the postseason only three times. So we're not exactly talking about a successful on-the-field franchise. Although, on the when it comes to off the field in terms of their popularity, their acceptance, I think the Football Cardinals did very, very well. The owner that took them out of Chicago was also the owner. He continued to be the owner of them. His name was Bill Bidwell.
Yep.
And he was a very tempestuous kind of a guy who could just would all of a sudden do quirky things. And he decided that there was a need for them to, leave, and they got an offer from Phoenix. So back in 1987, the team moved to Phoenix, and they became the Phoenix.
Wow.
So, this creates a lot of problems for me because I have trouble, when we'll learn later on, the Cardinals lose another, the St. Louis loses another team. But this one, it gets confusing when you try to talk about, well, which teams are we talking about? Which are the losing teams? Which of them that departed? Well, St. Louis ended up getting the St. Louis Rams. The Rams came on board in 1995. So St. Louis was without football, professional football, from 1990 to 1994. And we got the St. Louis Rams. We've got them from the Los Angeles. And Los Angeles is kind of an interesting town because the fact is that they lost both there. They had two football franchises at the time. They had the Raiders that had come down from Oakland and was there for a while. So all of a sudden, L.A. is the second largest market in the country, has no professional football and no NFL football, which is mind-boggling in itself. Now, the St. Louis Rams, the thing about them that's different than the St. Louis Browns is that they were a good team. They were twice in the Super Bowl. Once they beat the Tennessee Titans in 1999, and then they lost 20-17 to the evil New England Patriots. Oh, we won't go into detail about the nature of that club. And the other thing that St. Louis did for them is they built them their own exclusive home. This wasn't a multi-purpose stadium that was going to be used for a variety of sports, but they built the Edward Jones Dome. Later on, I'm sure it had other sponsor, naming right names, which seated about in the mid '60s, close
That's
to 70,000 people. That's a lot of folks. And again, the team was successful on the field and was also successful in terms of the participation
and
the interest of the fans. They drew very well.
Good stuff.
Yes, they did a lot of good things. The Rams, they had a very good reputation, and they were exciting to watch.
Yes,
they
were
a fast-moving team down the field. They were known for their offense, and I think they caught the interest of not only St. Louis but also the country as to the way that they won. So, sure enough, what happened is that their owner, Stan, forget his last name, Kransky
or something,
or whatever. He ended up deciding that they needed to move the team back to Los Angeles. And yes, so sure enough, in 2016, it was announced by the NFL owners that they voted to allow the Browns to move their team back
to
LA.
The Rams back.
Yeah.
You can't get your mind off the Browns. I understand.
So,
I know.
Oh, boy. That's right. So now what we've got is we've got two teams that have left, two football teams that have left St. Louis. And you're right. It's the whole thing with football is confusing with me. Sometimes when I see a score, I said, oh, that's the St. Louis. That's the Rams. I think. And then I thought, oh, no, that's the Cardinals.
Hopeless.
So it's hard to keep track. Yeah, it's very hopeless. I mean, it's enough to make you stop watching football, which I don't need any incentive.
Hey,
they got
no football.
Right? That's another story. They have no football. And you know what's interesting? It usually what happens is a city loses a sport. The second time they get it, it's like we've suffered loss. We've had the pain. We don't want to go through that again. So therefore, they work extremely hard to retain the team. In this case, wasn't meant to be.
Wow.
So we've got football. We got two losers in football. We've lost.
How about basketball?
So basketball. Well, we lost.
We grew up listening to the Hawks.
We, like I said, there's the Hawks,
Bob Pettit.
St. Louis Hawks. The St. Louis Hawks, with Bob Pettit was my favorite player.
Yeah.
Cliff Hagan. There are several different good players that they had. The St. Louis Hawks were another example of us having a team from 1955 to 1968 that was successful. In fact, we beat the Boston Celtics, considered the, you know, like the New York Yankees of the NBA in the day. They won so many championships with Red Auerbach as their coach and Bill Russell as their main player, Bob Cousy, etc. We actually beat them 1 year, 1958. So from 55 to 68, the St. Louis had the St. Louis Hawks. Now, we had another team earlier, an NBA team, but again, it was one of those one-year tryouts that didn't quite work out. So, the St. Louis Hawks, their problem was that the hockey team came on board in 1967, and they shared the Hawks played in Kiel Auditorium, so their facility was a little old. It wasn't very big. It seated about 11,000, which was a little light in terms of capacity compared to other teams. And when the Blues came on board in 67, it just seemed to capture the interest of the sports fan, and it resulted in a decreased interest in the NBA St. Louis Hawks. So we lost them to Atlanta. And we still have the Atlanta Hawks. The other thing that about basketball in St. Louis is that in 1974 through 76, we had a team called the Spirit of St. Louis. They were a part of a new fledgling association, new basketball association called the American Basketball Association. We had them for 2 years. They merged. With the ABA merged with the NBA in 1976, and several of the teams were strong enough and considered good enough teams that the NBA took a look at them and said, "Come on, join the fold, be part of the NBA." Well, guess what team
the
wasn't
Spirits.
Part
the
of
Spirits.
That fold? The Spirits became just just an orphan. A team looking for a league, and unfortunately they went by the wayside after 1976. Sad
losers.
Story.
We got to turn this around. I'm getting depressed.
When we take a look, and I'm just going to comment about a sport which is just mind-boggling. The good news is we haven't lost.
No, in fact,
this sport.
We invented it.
The reason we haven't.
Are we?
Well, no.
Are we there?
I'm very good. Oh, soccer.
I'm so
not
excited.
Yet.
I'm sorry.
We have a sport which we probably we have been known as being one of the soccer hotbeds of the country, with terms of developing soccer players, with in terms of amateur. St. Louis University has won 10 national championships. They've been in the NCAA Final Four. So, amateur sports. But this is a good news, bad news. The good news is we have the bad news is we've never had soccer. The good news is we've never lost.
John,
because we never had.
He's turning this around. Thank you.
Just thought it started on the upswing.
Okay.
Of soccer. So believe it or not, it's amazing that soccer has not. You know, there's Major League Soccer now in the U.S. and Chicago has the Fire and. Their teams all over the country, and I think the logical way that the St. Louis sports industry is looking at it is they're saying, "Screw football, you know, we don't need them. They don't want us. We don't need them.
Yeah,
Good riddance.
Done.
Get out of town. So what they've done, they've looked at, the logical thing they've looked at is soccer, and it's a money thing. I mean, it's coming because you play soccer. You can't play soccer in the Edwards Dome. It's too big. Major League Soccer venues are somewhere between 20 and 30,000, which would require St. Louis to pony up, find somebody to pony up money, to find another August A. Bush out there to pony up the money to build a stadium. And so that's in the works. But as usual, the Bro Show has come up with what we feel is a unique solution to this problem. And what we're doing is we're looking at a sport which St. Louis originated. A sport that now resides only in one city, almost.
Yeah.
We couldn't say completely.
Virtually.
But just most of the time, virtually all of the activity in this sport resides in St. Louis. And this is also a sport which we personally have had contact with. This sport is,
Forkball. 1896.
Started
in 1896, didn't
forkball. It? Forkball. 1896, there are leagues. This is an extremely popular sport. Now, everybody outside of St. Louis is saying, what the heck is corkball? Well, I guess the best way to start out with describing corkball is by saying it is a form of, it's like baseball in many respects. It has a pitcher, it has a catcher, it has a batter, it has balls, it has strikes.
That's where everything starts to change,
however,
though.
That it's a, because you basically, if you swing and miss the ball, catcher catches it, you're out. If you hit a foul ball, the foul territory is much smaller than it is in baseball, you're out. If you can have as many as five participants, which would include a pitcher, catcher, and three fielders, if a fielder catches the ball, you're out. But equipment-wise, and we could go through a lot of the other rules, the fact there's no runners, you get on with five balls, five balls make
four,
a base on balls versus four in baseball. And you get on base, and you just basically runs are scored by getting four walks, hits, etc., so that the runner eventually comes and crosses home plate, a theoretical runner, because there's nobody out there running. So this sport is good because the equipment is what makes it dramatically different, because the ball is a lot smaller. It's a little less than a tennis ball, I think.
It's an inch and a half in diameter. And obviously, it has cork center.
Yeah.
But it does have it has skin and seams like a baseball, but it's just smaller and lighter. Considerably lighter.
Yes, much lighter. And then the bat is more like a broomstick.
I'm glad you said that.
It could be like 30
inches or 30, something. Is it? 36, that's it. Hey, here's the thing, though. See, people may have a little trouble visualizing all this. And here's the key to understanding corkball. This was played in alleys in St. Louis. Now, you think of this now. That's what the fields still look like. They're long and narrow. So that's a corkball field. It's not really a field. It's a substitute for an alley. It was played in alleys. That's cool.
Mm-hmm. And that kind of demonstrates sort of some of the advantages of this sport is that you don't need an extremely large venue. It has some flexibility because what some of the teams, the leagues in St. Louis have done is one of them called the Gateway Club has actually been in existence since 1929 and has been very active in continuing to have their group of teams play. This is a sport that's played just like baseball in the summer, but they've actually taken it to the extent of having a field and actually have dimensions so that if you hit the ball a certain length, it can become a double, a home run, etc. So there are some variants in terms of the field itself. And again, remember that there are no runners, And you don't have to necessarily have it this way. This sport can be played by just two people. You can have a pitcher and a catcher, and that's all you need. But you can have as many as five. So I think one of the things that makes this appealing to St. Louis and is the fact that, first thing, it's got a hotbed of interest. There are a lot of people that are very familiar with it, including us. In fact, I remember when my father's company had a company picnic, and the sport of choice to play during the picnic was corkball. In fact, at the age of probably I was no more than 10, and the various employees of the company knew of my interest in baseball, they decided to make me the umpire of this game. And that was scary because I didn't know the rules. But that didn't get my way of making decisions, and which I did throw out my.
That was cool.
Threw him out of the game.
Yeah, you threw out Jim Jr. That was pretty cool.
Yeah. So, because he refused to get out of the way. He kept getting hit by the pitch, and that's another thing with corkball. This is a man sport. You know, usually what would happen in baseball, you get hit by a pitch, you get a base. Not in corkball, you get a ball. You just get one. In other words, it's just like getting another pitch that doesn't go across the plate. Just stand up there like a man and take it.
They hurt. Those little
balls. That's all I can say.
They penetrate a little bit.
Well, and here's something that appeals to Gary.
I love this part.
Attention about it, talking about rules, is that there is now, you know, we have some limitation as to what you can do with the baseball in terms of pitching it. You can have spitballs.
My favorite part.
Corkball. In other words, bring back
cheating.
The good old days. Some of the things we're used to back in the, you know, we haven't had a spitball pitcher in the major league since 1934. They still have them in corkball. So there, you know, the ball, you have curveballs, fastballs,
and
all that
balls,
good stuff.
And no mound.
With respect to no mound. The distance, as far as we know, is the same. It's 60 feet. But again, it's got a lot of this same stuff that the baseball has. But I think what appeals to me is the fact it's got this hotbed of interest. It's also got the ability, we don't have to worry too much about venue. The venue we can have some flexibility on. I don't think it is, you know, we don't need to have 20,000 people out there watching this sport to start out with. We could start with smaller crowds, create interest, and make this a more, more noticeable thing in the city. Now, what made me think about this was I took a trip to Australia back in 2000, and they have a sport called Australian rules football, and I
AKA footy, AKA footy.
The way that footy, that their sport originated, the history was that they had all of their teams were located in one city,
right?
Melbourne. So Melbourne hosted and had all of them.
Yeah.
So I thought, why don't we start that? We could do that in St. Louis. We could have our own major league with our own teams all within the confines of St. Louis and create our own sport. You know, not create,
popularize
it. Basically,
you know, John,
popularize.
I've been withholding some information from you. I hate to say it. Here's the deal.
Bring it on.
I've been thinking about this. I agree with everything you said, but here's something that you don't realize about corkball. You know, we saw it. You know, we saw a corkball field manifest in the middle of a picnic. You know, people played corkball behind City Refrigeration, Pop's company, in the alley, you know. And this got me to thinking, you know what? We could reignite the sport with the youth. And here's how. Corkball raves.
Hey, take a look at the other sport. You've got baseball, where you need all these, you know, you can have gloves in corkball, you can, but the bottom line is you don't need as many participants. You could have as few as two. Take a look at football, all that damn equipment, all the players, that's a mess. The only one that has a little bit of inkling, which is popular, is basketball, because you need a basketball and a hoop, but still, that's more than corkball. this corkball, all you need is an alley, a ball, and a broomstick bat.
But here's the deal.
And you're off to the races. You're playing.
A rave.
You're
think about it. You
right.
know what raves are. You don't know where they're going to be until like the night of or something like that. They move around. Yeah, a rave is.
Oh, I didn't know what a rave
yeah,
was.
A rave
you're educating
is
me.
A musical event / cultural event where it's young people. It's usually in urban areas. And, you know, the word gets out. Here's the place they rented. There's going to be a DJ and there's going to be wild dancing. And I hate to say it, drugs, but all kinds of stuff going on. It is a whole thing. Raves are a thing. So corkball raves. We don't know where it's going to be. Or there may be 10 of them. You know, it gets to be a neighborhood thing. Young people would get re-involved because of this. Probably have to have some drugs too. Sorry.
It reminds me.
Oh, well.
It reminds me of something that our brother was the manager of the Morton Steakhouse. And when they opened up in Washington, they didn't do any advertising. It was just considered prestigious
right.
to have their phone number
right.
to call to make a reservation.
Yeah.
It wasn't listed.
Right.
It was nowhere. So what we do is we create this element of mystery, suspense. Where is the next corkball game going to take place? And the fact is you don't need to have a lot in terms of infrastructure in order to have for the fans to watch this game. So, again, I also believe that, you know, we're not going to have a corkball, a professional, you know, major corkball league immediately.
Grassroots.
You're right. It has to start with that, taking that interest, which is right now the demographics are probably not real good. We've got a lot of older people playing it. It's a game that historically has
been a mainstay
in St. Louis. We need to cultivate a new group of participants. And from that, we then end up cultivating a new group
of fans. This
will
give the city the prestige and the self-worth it needs so badly.
Yes. And the fact is, if we keep all the teams in St. Louis, we don't have to worry about somebody stealing them. You know, and that's fine. If later on it becomes more popular, like Australian rules football is and other things take place. But I think that the fact that we have a firm founding history of St. Louis will bode well in terms of us being able to maintain some stability in terms of keeping a sports
franchise. This is cool.
Corkball is something which is not, you're not going to find it mentioned in the newspaper. It isn't going to, you're going to read about soccer.
Mm-hmm. You did.
You heard
corkball.
It first here. Here's what I'm thinking, man.
I'm thinking this could be the cultural revolution that St. Louis never had. These are small teams. These raves, let's say they pop up all over the place, and these teams will have personality. You know, let's just start it out right. You know, these are racially, sexual orientation, gender, all that stuff. Throw it out the window. You can be whatever you want, whoever you want, and these teams are going to get, I'd love to see a trans corkball team. That would be so cool. And they piss people off right and left.
Big
bathroom fights, all kinds of cool stuff. So yeah, social revolution.
I think we need to move to the next.
I could go on.
I'm sorry.
Well, it could solve some of the problems we're going to talk about in the news. That's what I'm saying. Go ahead.
Okay. So I think you get the idea about corkball. Maybe
yeah, 1 hour later.
The idea after listening to my brother. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
So film. Now, St. Louis has not exactly been a hotbed in terms of film production. It's not like Chicago where there's films being made every summer, it seems like. The number of films and the other thing that's kind of sad about St. Louis is the films that they are in, it's like a hit or it's just like,
yeah.
I think I saw The Arch in that movie. Oh,
yeah.
That's called Vacation. Airs, you know, Trains, Boats,
yeah,
and Airplanes,
Candy,
or whatever that movie was that Candy made. Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Oh, there's the
Shrinky
airport.
Brothers.
There's Lambert Airport.
The Shrinky Brothers.
Whoop-de-doo.
Those guys are great.
Fever Pitch.
Oh, that's the ballpark. That's where the Cardinals got beat up by the Boston Red Sox in that movie. Oh, that's wonderful. So, you know, the thing is that St. Louis, does somebody come in and just kind of put down all their equipment or look up and do a whole movie in St. Louis?
Nope.
Well, not very often. And what we've done is we've actually come up with that movie, the most recent one. There actually was one other called the St. Louis Bank Robbery, which I happened to watch the whole thing yesterday. I recommend it. Steve McQueen, Phil Moore,
nice.
The Ultimate. Really nice. But let's get to
White
the
Palace.
One we're talking about. That is White
which
Palace.
Which is a takeoff on what, John? What should it have been?
Should have been White Castle. Now, everybody knows White Castle, the little burgers that you eat very late at night. They're a 24/7 restaurant. There's a lot of them in St.
The originator,
of
the sliders, they call them sliders.
The name.
That's what a White Castle is.
Mystery biscuit, slider, you
not
name
meat.
It.
Not meat.
So
this was the first veggie burger, in my opinion. Don't you think? Soybeans.
Yeah, there's a semblance of meat in there somewhere. And the burger is so small, there wouldn't be that
That's
much
correct.
Meat if it was all meat anyway. I mean, it's known for its bun. It's known for its
and the price.
The onions. Yeah, price is pretty good. So we got this movie that centers around. Well, it doesn't center around, but a lot of it takes place in a. It starts in a hamburger grill, a joint, and White Castle wouldn't give them rights to use their name, so they had to make it White Palace. It's based on a novel that was out around the same time, and it stars Susan Sarandon and James Spader, filmed in 1990, when both of these actors were very, very well known. Susan Sarandon had been in Bull Durham, and she had kind of this and James Spader had been.
Yeah, he was kind of an up and comer. He was young.
He's an up and comer guy, and you know the thing that both of those movies had was they were pretty steamy sex movies. A lot of it in it, so there was. And they carried that forth and realized that we can use that. This is two good people to play in this movie because that's what we have. This has been called by some people this year's Pretty Woman, but it doesn't really have it. The situation's a lot different. It isn't the situation we saw in the Richard Gere movie. This one, we're talking about an older woman and a younger guy. A younger guy played by James Spader named Max, who's got a very comfortable life.
He's like in a bubble. Yeah,
he's Jewish. Yep. He's in a bubble. He's lost his wife. And so as a result, he is kind of in a quandary as to where to go. I mean, with respect to professionally, he's fine. Socially, he's got
tight.
A group of friends.
Tight friends.
But
Too tight.
In fact, they're uncomfortable. That's how tight they are.
Yeah.
So those, and Jerry, maybe you can kind of, you saw the movie most recently, so maybe you can give us a little bit more about it.
Several things struck me about the movie, and we won't go into another hour on the movie, although we easily could.
Yeah, gee whiz, I can't believe how much fun we were having. Time flies when you're having fun.
Okay, so here's what happened in this cool movie. This movie is a movie about many things, but the pivotal point in a movie, in my opinion, I think John's too, is we got this guy who lost his wife in an automobile accident. So this is sudden. This is big. And also this is something I really can identify with. You know, Mary Jane and I just lost our son to an automobile related accident where he was on his bike and got hit. So this, I understand this sudden feeling. Suddenly, this person is not there. I mean, it's really sudden. So that's what Max was faced with. And he wasn't just in a quandary. He was circling the drain. He was having a tough time. He was just going through the motions. And so he's in that state. And, you know, he can't do anything with his friends without being reminded of his wife because she's part of that, you know, Olive Street, Frontenac Forest kind of,
Frontenac Forest,
really
cool,
pretty rich Jewish community, and they're tight. They,
Yeah, I call them kind of upper middle class.
Very much. And you know, they have their whole thing. They have a common heritage. They're tight, tight, tight. And, you know, he feels trapped and depressed. Everything he does with these guys brings him down. So, yeah, he's going to some bachelor party, and he's the guy who had to get the burgers. And that's where we meet Susan Sarandon, the Sarandon. She is at the White Palace, and she's the one who's stolen the burgers. And they got the burgers to the event, and sure enough, some of the boxes were empty. And he's pissed off, can't handle it, goes back to the place, wants his money back. So, yeah, he has an encounter, pretty strong one, with Susan Sarandon. And, wow, you know, you would never guess from that point forward there might be a romance, but there was, because later on, he's all depressed after he goes back to this party. Can't believe it. He has to watch slides of his ex-wife because they all grew up together. So this is tough, tough, tough. Ooh. And he wants to go get, he has a pretty good amount of liquor at the bachelor party. And then, you know, he says, well, I'm going to go to a bar. And sure enough, guess who's there? Susan's there. Her character is there.
Yeah, he just happens to bounce into a dive.
I don't think it was really a dive.
It was a neighborhood bar.
Borderline
I would
dive.
Call it a neighborhood. Hey, by the way, I want to point a clarification as an accountant. That is, he ordered 50 burgers and he got 44. So he was light sick.
I think you're
everybody
right about that,
needs to know that.
Sorry. Okay? So then we're...
Move on.
They have an interesting encounter, to say the least, and it does not go well. She's putting the moves on him. So she is the aggressor in this situation. Because, I mean, he is a pretty boy. The hair, the face, the physique.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, wow, she just full court press. She's on this guy. And she gets past a couple of the hurdles. You know, hey, let's call truce on the business with the hamburgers. Let's forget about that. And so she's moving. And I won't go into all the details, but there's a moment where she discloses that she lost her son. That's all it took. Because Max, the character Vader plays, is almost out the door, staggering a little bit. And he turns around, and the whole movie pivots on that moment. Now they got a shared thing, and a thing that only people who have suffered a loss like that can understand. And so, wow, there it is.
So this common thread, which is not the theme,
mm-hmm.
but basically is the spark that allows them. It's sort of to start. It's sort of the beginning of the one thing, because without that mention of loss at that point, Max would have walked out the
but
door.
But we do have,
we
a movie.
Have a movie.
These people are as different as can be. This is not like Jenny and Forrest, you know, peas and carrots. No. These people are as different as you can imagine. She's 44. He's what, 20 something? Yeah, 27. And so,
27.
Big age difference, big economic difference. He drives a Volvo, lives in an unbelievable house. She rents a place in Dogtown, which is like, it's a house. I will say that for it. But that's about it. Kind of has a porch. And, you know, and she has not cleaned this place since God knows when, since she moved in, because she is still really in grief over her son, and she's just going through the motions too. So these are two ships passing the night with a lot of commonality, and not just that, this disparity between them actually starts becoming a thing, and they both are getting off on it.
Yeah.
This is not just a one-way thing. This is not a cougar movie. These guys really get into each other. They have great sex, because she's just, you know, she rates herself pretty high, and I think he does too. And she
delivers
good stuff, you know. And so, yeah, this goes on. Now, the obvious things start to crop up after a period of time. And you know, he's there every night. He's virtually living there. His friends are like, where are you? What's going on? You know, we're trying to, you know, he's not in the bubble anymore. And they're all connected at the hip and everybody's freaking. So, and she's kind of like, you know, well, you know, they're both getting a little restless. You can't sit inside that little house all the time. So, you know, it ends up that he takes her to Thanksgiving dinner after a number of weird, crazy circumstances. And that, wow, that is a shit show. That thing.
Well, she forces the issue by feeling very upset.
I'm not good enough.
Uncomfortable
I'm
with the fact that he isn't. I'm not good enough to be with your friends.
So therefore, what
they have
this?
To do
What's
that?
Going on
they
here?
Have to do that. They have to put it out loud somewhere, you know. Yeah. So they do, and it's terrible, terrible. Yeah. And, you know, in the end, I'm going fast now. In the end, she cuts out. She goes like, she quits her job and moves and leaves a note for him in the house, which is empty. And he tries to get over her, you know, and he can't. You know, he even goes to a little social gathering to get reintegrated into his group and all that stuff. And he just flips out. He can't do it. He can't do it. You know, and the thing that got him was he was a big critic of her housekeeping, by the way, of Serena's housekeeping. So then he got her a dustbuster as a present. Boy, he kicked him out when he did that. Get the fuck out of here. This is my house. You know, I'll clean it whenever I want to and if I want to. You know, she really showed a lot of verve. She's quite a character. And so why does he leave this party with his wonderful upper-class friends? Because the hostess has a dustbuster, just like the one he bought Susan Sarandon. And he walks over to it. He can't resist it. Opens it up and shouts to the whole room, "This dustbuster has never had any dust in it." That's the straw that broke the camel's back. And of course, everyone in his group thinks he's absolutely nuts. But if the viewer, us watching this, total sense, makes total sense. And that.
Oh, yeah. It's like, yes. This is antiseptic.
And you sense this it, isn't you feel life. It. You know, when you are in James Spader's shoes walking around with his hoity-toity group, you feel it. It's palpable. You feel how shallow the whole thing is, how worthless the whole thing is. And how much more attractive Susan Sarandon is, regardless of her age, regardless of her clothing choices, which are borderline. And, you know, she smokes constantly and, you know, all this stuff and drinks. Whoa, she can really drink. Yeah.
She's a hoochown.
But you love it.
But not, yeah, but
you
know, within control.
You totally get sucked into this whole thing and you feel what he feels. And so now he left the dustbuster scene. Goes and he drives right over to a place that's empty. He's got the note. He's gone. And, you know, he finds out where she is, quits his job, packs up his Volvo, and heads out to New York City where she is. And the movie more or less ends there. But man, here's where it gets a little controversial. There's an ending and it's fantastic. He woos her in her place of work.
Yep.
And it's just, I think it's good, but a lot of people don't like it. He woos her, and in this restaurant, he throws all the stuff off of the table he's on, pulls her up by her armpits, puts her on the table, lies on top of her, and starts dry humping and kissing her, and the whole place goes up for grabs, man. It's New York City, and they're rooting him on. Some people are laughing and disgusting, and it's great. He pulls his sports coat over him like they have a little privacy, and that's the end of the movie. But
I personally have no trouble with the end of it. It just seems so many people says, oh no, here's another rom-com with that, you know, everybody cheering at the end and clapping and this and that. I just want to, as we kind of wrap this up, I want to point out a couple things. That number one, it got mixed reviews. It probably, I would say, I like Roger Ebert. He gave it 3.5 stars. So the movie is got some legs. I mean, it's definitely worth watching, particularly if you're from St. Louis. It's all filmed in a location, including some of the interior scenes. The rundown little house that Susan Sarandon has. And by the way, her name is Nora, and she likes Marilyn Monroe because of Norma Jean Baker. That was another little quirky thing of hers. Hey, that house right now, it's been
not surprised, not surprised,
lot.
But
so
I just have to say this,
was.
In my first love, my first love, my first love, my first love,
I'm sitting down,
was Nora Duncan. Shout out to Nora if she's out there. I mean, this was it, man, and she was an older woman in high school, being a class above you is a big deal. And I was short and I had trouble finding women. And I was just starting to grow. And that's when I met Nora, and she was the aggressor. And all this stuff. I have a number of commonality points with this movie, including the other side of the tracks deal and all that. And that is why she ditched me. And wow. Yeah. Okay, so
I'm okay.
I know everybody's worried a little bit right now. I'm okay.
Okay. I think the fact you were able to kind of say this and bring it out allows you to release the emotions, which hopefully after too many years to count, you're able to get over.
Yeah, I'm gonna withhold information from this point
forward. No, just kidding. I got one this other piece of trivia that drove me nuts, and I was asking because I couldn't remember, but Kathy Bates is fourth credited in this movie. And what's funny about it is this movie comes out in October of 1990, and in November of 1990, a movie called Misery, of which she wins the Academy Award for, comes out. So this is like the movie just before she kind of hits her stardom and becomes a major player.
She has a very small part.
Movie industry.
Very small part.
Kathy Bates. Very small part in. Okay, well, listen, we don't get to talk about St. Louis movies very often,
yeah.
And here we are. We found one, and
it's
a good movie. It's like I said, give me a good movie. Don't give me an excellent movie. I don't need to see the musical with the spectacle, the Cecil B. DeMille. Give me a solid, small movie.
Oh, yeah. This is one of my favorite movies, obviously. We could talk about it a lot longer, but we're going to talk about the news. And St. Louis is in the news. And as John says, if St. Louis is in the news, it's bad news. And so, bear in mind as we talk about this corkball. That's all I'm going to say. Go ahead, John.
Well, over this last week, finally came down, there was a police officer by the name of Jason Stockley who had been charged with first-degree murder, and he was acquitted. This all happened September 15th, and within hours, St. Louis was protesting that. The protests that existed were nowhere, and I think one of the reasons it hit the news was because it's sort of like, well, is St. Louis going to have another Ferguson? Ferguson's a suburb of St. Louis, where they had a comparable situation with police and altercations with the public, et cetera. So, no, it was nowhere near that bad. There were three or four days of I would call it demonstrations. It's somewhere between demonstrations and riot. There was a few bricks thrown, some property damage. There were some arrests. There were some policemen that were injured. But we're not talking like starting fires or policemen getting or protesters getting killed. And it all kind of calmed down by the end of 3 days. And I kind of was a little disappointed with the way the policemen almost act like they're doing like high
five. And chanting. They're chanting a Black Lives Matter chant. Assholes. Our streets.
Yeah, our streets. Yeah.
Disgusting.
I just feel bad about it. I feel this is a demonstration of lack of professionalism by the St. Louis police. But that's, I'm not down there. I don't see the whole thing.
It's way beyond that. It's just sickening. I mean.
But I think what this demonstrates that's nationwide is the fact that the difficulty, because of the nature of a policeman's profession and the fact that he is in constant danger, the way that the law community views a murder in this regard is it's very difficult to convict a policeman of first-degree murder. It has to be very, very blatant. I'm not going to bore you with the stats. We don't have the time, but there's been studies done on it. And the fact is that, there's these cases come up a lot and they go through a certain protocol. But quite often they fall by the wayside at the indictment level where they fail because there's not enough evidence to even charge the person. And then quite often they charge them. And then they maybe second degree murder, first degree murder, et cetera. But most of these cases, you find that the policemen end up walking. And the problem is that it's becoming a much bigger problem. And we're going to have something comparable in Chicago that is going to be coming up. That situation, I'm going to do just a quick parallel. Bottom line is this policeman, you take a look at him.
Which one?
He's like a Rambo. He's got all the St. Louis ones. I'm sorry, St. Louis ones. I don't know much about the one in Chicago. Let's just stick with the one in St. Louis. The thing is, Jason Stockley, he's high school in Belleville across the river. He ends up going to the military academy in West Point and graduating from there. I was kind of mind-boggled by the majors. Nuclear energy and philosophy. He had a double major. He then ends up enlisting, becoming, well, he doesn't enlist. He's got a requirement based on his going to West Point of serving, and he becomes a officer and goes to Iraq. He's in combat duty, gets a Bronze Star. He's got all the credentials. I mean, what the heck? He then ends up coming back to his hometown. He becomes a policeman, you know, obviously resides in St. Louis. Is at the top of his cop class. I mean, but you can just sense by what's going on in this that, you know, being at the top of your class in your police class doesn't necessarily make you the nicest guy in the world.
Rambo.
He's a macho guy. He's Rambo. I mean, in fact, I think the thing. So what happens? And the victim has a rap sheet that's longer than the guy's arm. That includes drugs, possession of weapons, etc., burglary, you name it, it's on the list. No murder, and so they kind of know, they profile this guy, and they're out for him. So they stop him at a Church's Fried Chicken, and he decides the guy in the car, his name is Lamar Smith. He ends up deciding to, I'm not going to hang here. I'm going to, bash into the police car.
Oh, that's a bad thing to do to police. They do not like chases on foot or in the car. And his unit was damaged.
In addition to the fact that, did you notice that? Yeah. So, they end up speeding away and about a mile later. All this is happening in North St. Louis, by the way. We don't want to get, sort of the tough section of St. Louis. And so the policeman, Jason, is a little irate about all this. So they jump into the police car. It's not damaged enough. They can't pursue Lamar Smith. And they find that he's
at a stoplight. At a stoplight, wasn't it?
And in the interim.
Or did he pull over?
He pulled over. He had actually pulled over. So a couple of things. Number one, Jason Stockley, the policeman, ends up, they have the audio. They don't have any video. They have the audio of this where he basically is hollering, I am going to kill that MF-er.
He said motherfucker. He said MF-er?
And so he is a little bit irate.
Oh, well, okay. You can't do that. You can't do that. Okay, I understand.
I have trouble saying in addition to that. Well, let's not get into the details about that. So the other thing that happened is then he's not driving the car. His policeman that he's with is that guy ends up ramming the other guy's car. He says, ram that car. He rams it. He gets out. He goes and he then shoots the guy 5 times before he gets out of his, but before Lamar Smith gets out of his car. Now, first thing is, and I don't know whether he was carrying this, but to give you sort of the Rambo thing, he, against police regulations, keeps a AK-47 with him. Now, I don't
know
if he had that with
him
when he was right there at the car or not.
It has a banana clip of 30 bullets on it.
Yeah, an AK-47 is an assault rifle that you typically would find with a banana clip that it's like an M16. It's an automatic weapon. It's the one that here in Chicago is pretty popular with the gangs, police do use them here. But in St. Louis, you're not supposed to have those. So he's basically violated police regulations. So the other thing is that there is a gun that was located in the car of Lamar Smith that was sitting between him and, in the other seat.
And this is the ostensible reason he blew him away, right?
Because, yes, I mean, he says, look, my life was in danger. There's a weapon involved. I saw the weapon.
Boom, 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 boom.
He's making a move towards it. So therefore, that I was in danger. So therefore, I felt that I needed to fire my weapon. So he fired five times, kills the guy. And during the court, is this whole, oh, the other thing about this is these things don't, you know, it takes them forever. This shooting took place on December 20th, 2011. He was found not guilty on September 15th, 2017. So we're talking almost 6 years to the day of the actual shooting that this is all resolved. And this is not uncommon. We don't have time to go through all the rigmarole that happens in terms of trying to figure out, well, who's going to prosecute this? Is it the city? Is it the county? Is it the state? Is it the feds? And it's got to go all the way up, and the feds usually hang it up forever. Then there's a question of civil. This one was settled civil, $900,000.
Yeah.
In Chicago, that's chump change. Here, we settled the one that's getting a lot of controversy for $5 million. These things are just a way of life for our aldermen to vote for and agreeing to. So when you have settlements, there's a lot of question about containing mm-hmm. evidence, not having it made public. There's all kinds of problems you're running.
This gun, by the way, had Rambo's DNA on it and had none of the victim's DNA on it. Zero.
Exactly. Right. So sure. They said that wasn't conclusive.
Yeah,
I
picked up the gun. That's one of my DNA's on it. Yeah, he probably wiped it down, removed all traces of his DNA before I got there. Yeah, right.
But surely the officer
never.
Would not have planted
oh,
the
no,
gun.
No.
That just never happened.
Jesus.
Yeah, so, hey, look, this policeman, he may be, who knows? That's the gist of the story. Now, just to the essence of time here, we've got a comparable situation here in Chicago where it started in 2014. It's now at the point where they haven't even, there is a policeman that's been charged with first degree murder. This situation is a little more dire. We have a situation where a policeman comes up to Lamar Smith is, I don't know his exact age, I'd have to look it up.
Okay.
Actually, he's 24 years old. He's African American. So the thing is that in Chicago, we've got a kid, his name is McDonald, is his last name, Laquan McDonald. And what happened in our situation back in 2014 is that a kid has got a knife, he's acting delirious, he's got mental problems. He's running away from the police, and all of a sudden a police car, not the ones that are originally at the scene, comes up, sees the kid with the knife. He's running away from this police officer who just came up. The police officer pumps 16 rounds into him.
In his back.
Of which half of them are in his back, and he's carrying a knife. There's no weapon.
He's running away.
There's no
he's
gun
not, like,
involved
near.
In this one. And so, and he's running away, and so as a result, this is the one that's in Chicago now. And it kind of bothers me a little bit because it's at the point now where he's been charged with first-degree murder. They're still kind of hemming and hawing whether they're going to have the change the venue because they claim there might be bias with the jury, et cetera, et cetera. By the way, one of the things that's interesting in the old case,
no
the St. Louis case, was the police officer decided to not use jury trial. He decided to go with the judge. And the judge had 20 years service and was considered to be, you know, a pretty reasonable guy. So, which again points out that how difficult it is to convict somebody. So I am just worried that, you know, based upon history, I don't care how blatant this one looks. I'm just worried that this is going to end up being a situation where there's going to be a big riot if this comes down the wrong way.
Yeah.
If this guy
isn't
convicted for first degree murder.
Yeah, this is bad.
Holy geez.
Two comments here. Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead, John. Finish up.
The notoriety of the Chicago case is so great that our police chief lost his job. The Cook County district attorney lost her job because of the way it was handled, and they did nothing wrong. They basically followed
He's
protocol.
Screwed.
But
yeah.
Protocol was really bad. It's screwed because it basically gave them excuses for not bringing out. And by the way, there's a video
That's
on this.
That's the worst.
Too.
Now, here, yeah.
So you're watching a kid get shot. You're watching the kid go down, the whole bit. So that video was concealed because of the court settlement and because of a variety of things. And finally, just out of just the kettle was just the boiling point of this whole case was just so high that finally the district attorney just said out of, she didn't do this. She did it because of, she basically charged him with first degree murder, the cop, based upon public safety. In other words, if he didn't do it, the place was going to go nuts.
Yeah, I think everything in Chicago, you know, for the last years could be really, you could just draw a line through all that and just say, Rahm got pissed off.
Hey, yeah. And the other thing is Rahm's job was considered, I mean, there was a lot of talk of his, let's just say he lost a lot of political points. And, you know, Rahm is not exactly the most popular guy up here. He makes tough decisions.
I mean, he scares the shit out of people.
Very unpopular.
A lot of underpants we're talking about here. Brown stars, hey, not brown stars.
He's got, these are, yeah, right.
So, well, okay. Like, oh, solutions. Dear. You're right. We're about solutions, aren't we, John? Okay. Point number one.
Yeah, we are about solutions.
First of all, stop trying these guys for first degree murder. It don't work. Forget that. Take it down a notch. And at least get some convictions. You know, people aren't going to be totally happy with that, but you know what? They're going to be a lot happier than they are now. People are really pissed off. Point number two, you know what? There's a lot of middle-class white people who are having trouble finding a job, okay? White guys, here's a job. Offer your services to ride around with black people. I mean, really? Come on.
That's good.
That's like rule number one. You know, number one, if you're black and you're driving a car, be very polite to any law enforcement people. But much better than that is to find a white guy to drive it. So.
Should be like a social
for profit, though.
To offer. I mean, you know, some people say, well, I'm going to go clean up this community and spend the day with my corporation going into this area and cleaning a park out. Well, why don't we have it where these corporations say, well, for one day, our employees are going
sensible.
To ride around
that's very
in the car with somebody.
I was thinking,
tweakers
and people like that, you know, these guys making meth in their trailer houses, instead of blowing themselves up, they could ride around in the car. But I guess you might have a better point there, John.
Well, what's going to happen? They're going to exchange drugs. You can have some meth.
Good point. That's going to go nowhere. No, that's going to lead to a lot of accidents is what that's going to do. Yeah, we're making fun of this situation, but it is shitty. Yeah, okay.
It is bad.
Corkball.
I like your first one. It's I like both of them. Both of them are very, very good. In fact, I like the second one even better.
Thank you. Yeah. Hey.
Yes. Good job.
Let's just get some wild raves out there with all kinds of crazy corkball teams. That's what I'm going for. And I want like crazy uniforms. I want face paint, you know. Really, this could go. All right. I'll leave it at that.
Oh God. I think we've covered a lot of territory.
Yeah, we're gonna need a day off.
A long period of time.
No.
Jeez, I'm gonna go back to bed, that's for sure. Holy mackerel. Well, it's been a lot of stuff. That's all I can say. And I look forward to seeing how some of these things, you know, work out with St. Louis sports, with the Chicago having a comparable situation with their police. And we do recommend that you go out and, well, that you not go out, but you stream and see
White
this
Palace.
Movie. So.
All right. It's on HBO in case people are looking for it.
So.
All right, buddy. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay.
Hey. Oh!